This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at Tuesday's headlines, and we begin up on Capitol Hill, where the Senate on Tuesday approved an extension of unemployment benefits through the end of November. The total price tag, $34 billion, and the Democrats got it their way by passing that money without having to find spending cuts to offset that $34 billion, which will instead now be added to the already growing U.S. deficit. According to the Democrats, Republicans have spent money through deficit spending for years, including funding the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for most of the Bush administration that way. Republicans, though, say our debt situation is so dire that we need to make sure we take steps at every turn to not add to it when it's not absolutely necessary. They say spending cuts in other areas should have been taken to offset the $34 billion in unemployment benefits, which they say they support, just as long as it's done in a balanced budget type of way. Two Republican senators joined with the Democratic majority, including brand new West Virginia Senator Kurt Goodwin, who was sworn in earlier in the day. Mr. Goodwin's tenure in the U.S. Senate will likely be brief, however, as his political mentor, West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin, made it official today that he will in fact be a candidate for that Senate seat come November. Of course, it was vacated in late June by the death of the longtime serving West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd. So who was right in this whole unemployment benefits debate? Were the Democrats right that it was so urgent that spending cuts weren't necessary to pass these jobless benefits? Or were Republicans right that spending cuts needed to be made and that they were easy to be made? We'll ask J.D. Foster, economist at the Heritage Foundation. We'll also get his analysis of how Democrats actually plan to reduce the debt. And we'll get his analysis of a new Gallup poll showing 60% of Americans don't believe that Social Security benefits will be there for them when they reach the age of Social Security eligibility. Again, dateline.radioamerica.org or worldnetdaily.com. Also today, the Senate Judiciary Committee voting 13-6 to pass the nomination of Elena Kagan as the next Associate General for the U.S. Supreme Court to the full Senate. It was a party-line vote with the exception of one, South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham voting to approve the nomination of Kagan. He was the lone Republican also last year to support the nomination in committee of nominee Sonia Sotomayor. Many conservatives already very upset with Graham for supporting this nomination. As for President Obama today, his main focus was meeting with the new Prime Minister of Great Britain, David Cameron. The two leaders met at the White House today and then held a joint press conference at the White House. One of the major topics of their discussions, and certainly the Q&A session with reporters, is the nearly year-old decision by the British government to go along with the decision of Scottish officials to release the only man ever convicted in association with the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. Ali El-Megrahi was released on compassionate grounds in August of last year as a result of doctors saying he had less than 3 months to live due to an aggressive form of prostate cancer. Well, it's been almost a year, and Megrahi is still very much alive, with some doctors saying he could live another 10 years. Today, President Obama made it clear that he's always been opposed to the decision to release Megrahi.
I think all of us here in the United States were surprised, disappointed, and angry about the release of the Lockerbie bomber. And my administration expressed very clearly our objections prior to the decision being made and subsequent to the decision being made. So we welcome any additional information that will give us insights and a better understanding of why the decision was made.
But many family members of the victims of Pan Am Flight 103 back in 1988 are unlikely to accept that explanation. Just last week, Bert Ammerman, who lost his brother as a result of that terrorist attack, says none of this would have happened without the U.S. tacitly approving it.
One thing I've learned in 21 years is nothing happens in Great Britain without the USA saying it's okay. Obama's administration could have gone back channels to say, don't release this guy. It didn't take place. This is oil. It's despicable. It's unethical. It's immoral. It's illegal.
Mr. Ammerman making those comments last week on MSNBC. At the White House today, British Prime Minister David Cameron saying he has also always been against this decision, noting it was made by the previous administration of Gordon Brown and backing up the Scottish officials. Cameron says it's clear that Megrahi never should have been released, regardless of his condition.
I'm not standing here today and saying it was a bad decision to release Megrahi because I'm here. I said this a year ago at the time, that it was a bad decision, it shouldn't have been made. The British government as well should have been clear that it was a bad decision rather than going along with it. I took that very clear view. This was the biggest mass murder in British history, and there was no business in letting him out of prison.
Cameron says he's not likely to instigate an official inquiry just to come to the same conclusion that he's always had, that this was a really bad idea. But he says he will have his cabinet officials go through the paperwork again to make sure all relevant information is known. Cameron says the worst part now is that Megrahi is free while the family members of his victims still need to suffer.
I don't need an inquiry to tell me what was a bad decision. It was a bad decision. And if you like, the big fact that's changed over the year that makes it an even worse decision is the fact that, of course, Megrahi is still free at liberty in Libya rather than serving the prison sentence in Scotland as he should be doing.
Another major topic addressed at the press conference and certainly in the talks today between Obama and Cameron was, of course, the BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Much like just about every other politician who's commented on the issue, Cameron says this was BP's fault and they should be responsible.
I completely understand the anger that exists right across America. The oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico is a catastrophe for the environment, for the fishing industry, for tourism. I've been absolutely clear about that. And like President Obama, I've also been clear that it is BP's role to cap the leak, to clean up the mess, and to pay appropriate compensation.
On the interview front today, in addition to my conversation with J.D. Foster of the Heritage Foundation about various headlines in the economy today, please find my interview with Ed Whalen, former Supreme Court law clerk for Justice Antonin Scalia and currently president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington. We'll get his thoughts on whether Elena Kagan belongs on the Supreme Court. And you'll hear my conversation with Nate Kellum, senior counsel at the Alliance Defense Fund, about an amazing case of students and a teacher at a Christian school being barred by Supreme Court police from freely exercising their religion just to pray quietly on the steps of the Supreme Court, the very institution tasked with preserving that liberty. Those interviews can be found at dateline.radioamerica.org or worldnetdaily.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.